Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
People's right to vote is also an issue where, you know, we're losing our freedoms here. The issue of a write-in candidate, which closes the election so that Democrats and independents don't have a real candidate. They end up with a fake candidate. And it's a way that some commissioners in the past have used to stack the deck against their most viable opponent. And Mr. Calkins, for instance, you have someone running in your district who has very close ties to you. And I don't understand. We've talked about this before. That is waving a big red flag that you know that you have not done a good job and that you're having to take these measures to win. And even the one in District 5 has close ties to you.
Yeah, this young lady, Sandy Dimmick, who was speaking at the Santa Rosa County Commission, this is the committee meeting last Monday. We just hadn't had time to get to all this, but especially with, you know, qualification period ending on Friday, this is a really big problem. Okay, if you believe in the idea of democracy, and I hope that you do, then you believe in the idea that everybody should have a chance to vote. And everybody should have a chance to have their vote cast and count equally with anybody else who is voting in a particular election. We have rules in Florida that are manipulated by local candidates in Escambia County and Santa Rosa County to deny that right to all kinds of people, particularly Democratic voters and no party affiliation voters. And so you've got, like, in this case, what Sandy Dimmick is talking about is in Santa Rosa County, you have District 5. District 5 was a part of this, too. But you have District 3, okay? James Calkins is running for re-election, District 3. And he is facing two what I would call real candidates, okay? He's got two actual candidates who are running campaigns actively, Jerry Cooey and Rhett Rowell. Now, this is already a problem because James Calkins doesn't actually need to win a majority. He only needs to win a plurality against Jerry Cooey and Rhett Rowell in the now closed Republican primary. For my own sake, what I would advocate for is you let them run against each other, and if nobody gets a majority, then they have to have a runoff so that whoever you wind up getting elected, this is the basic principle you should have, is that whoever gets elected in an area has to get a majority of the voters eligible to vote in that election, right? That's your general, that's your default premise. That's what it means to live in a democracy, or if you prefer, a constitutional representative republic. For our purposes today, please don't text me. We don't live in a democracy. Shut up. Oh my God. For the last time, shut up. Anyway, you want to argue political philosophy and theory with me? Great. We could do that a different day. But you people drive me crazy. Whichever way you prefer to talk about it, doesn't matter. The point is, everybody should get a vote. That's not going to happen this time around. What you're going to have is a closed Republicans-only primary because you have not one, but two write-in candidates who have to pay no money and do nothing. They do nothing to qualify for these elections. Have to file a couple of papers. That's it. Nothing. They don't have to be legitimate candidates. They can be down-the-street besties with the candidate, and by filing in this particular election, they have closed it off to Democrats, so you have a closed primary in District 3, of which whoever gets the plurality will be elected. That's it. They have to actually have an election in November. Okay. So in November, you're going to have 180 last count? We just cracked 200. 200,000 people. I mean, they don't all aren't registered to vote. There's some children, okay? But, you know, of the electorate in Santa Rosa County, 200,000 people are going to go to the vote. And, of course, they're not. We're going to max out at, 50% for a presidential election. Anyway, we're going to get people to go, and whoever gets the majority, there's going to be one person with their name on the ballot, and then there's going to be a little line with a dot. Who's going to win that election? Of course, the person with the... Of course, okay? So not only don't Democrats or no party affiliate folks get to vote in the primary across Santa Rosa County for District 3, but the person who doesn't even win a majority of just the Republicans will win this election. And so you split the we like the incumbent versus the we don't like the incumbent vote. Right? You follow all this? Okay, and that's not just happening in District 3 in Santa Rosa County. That's also now, at the last minute, last week, we have District 5 in Santa Rosa County, Colton Wright's district. He is running to be reelected against, look at the financials. We have Republican Mike Priest, no money raised. We have, he may be a legitimate candidate, but he hasn't raised any money yet. And we have Michael Stevens, the guy who shows up and is James Calkins' best conspirator, to yell and scream about whatever is bothering him that day, usually against Kerry Smith, sometimes against Colton Wright, sometimes whoever, okay? So Michael Stevens, who is not a legitimate candidate, in my opinion, is a write-in. Evan Turner and Ronald Martonic. You couldn't have just one or two. You have three now, just to be sure that they stick until the general election. This is insanity. This is craziness. Because, by the way, if all you had were three, if you didn't have any write-ins, this would be an open primary, right? This would be two Republicans against each other in an open primary. And you remember what happened last time around in District 4? You may not, but I'm going to tell you in case you forget. That in District 4, that's Navarre, you had two Republicans, okay, Ray Eddington and Dave Peach, and you had a write-in candidate who dropped out at the last minute. And because that person dropped out too close to the primary, they couldn't redo all the ballots and make sure that all the Democrats got a chance to vote, so that got pushed to the general election. At least that was fair. At least that was fair. But it was still screwed up. But at least that was two candidates running against each other. And there's a going theory that one of the reasons Ray Eddington won, I don't know the mind of every voter, but there's one theory that says when you go to the polls and you're the dominant party in the county, Republicans, who do you vote for? You vote for the candidate that you know, in theory? Or do you vote for the candidate who alphabetically comes first and you know to vote for the Republican? I'm here to vote for Republicans. R, Ray Eddington. E comes before P. We're done. I don't know, but it's a theory because that was one of the most baffling electoral outcomes I've ever seen. So that's District 3 and District 5 in Santa Rosa County. District 1's no better, okay? In District 1 in Santa Rosa County, how many people you got here? I forget now the total number. You've got, let's see, you got Roller Ayers, no money raised. Bobby Burkett's actually running a campaign. He's got bunches of money raised, okay? 28,000 in contributions, okay? Then you have write-in Jason Hatfield. Then you have a Democrat withdrawn, so it doesn't count. Sam Parker, of course, running a campaign with $156,000 raised. Then you have another qualified write-in, no money raised, not doing anything, and Aaron Williams, who is, I think he's a legitimate candidate. He shows up at county commission meetings. We know who he is. He's only raised $2,000, but he's at least playing. Okay, so you've got three Republicans running and maybe a fourth who's qualified, and then you've got a write-in candidate, not one, but two, to close off the election of Democrats. It's the same nonsense in Escambia County. In Escambia County, County Commissioner District 1, you've got Jeff Burgosh running for re-election. Jeff Burgosh, some people love him. I said it. It's true. Some people love him. He's got $100,000 raised for a county commission seat. Then you have Steven Stroberger. Some people also love him. Some people do not want Jeff Burgosh. Okay, so far so good. And then you have Tyler Alger, who apparently lives with, as is the son of, apparently, lives with his parents, who are both fairly close to the Burgashes. He's a qualified write-in. And then you have Justin Smith, who we wouldn't know much about, except we have those text messages that came out from Jeff Burgash's phone, in which there are dozens of text messages back and forth between Justin Smith and Jeff Burgash. That make them besties? We don't know, because most of the entries are blacked out, redacted. You can't make this up. This is true. Late last week, we talked about this last week, you have the guy who has run twice for that seat, Jesse Casey, who then got co-opted into, mended fences with and decided to work for Jeff Burgash as his aide, then put himself on long-term leave in order to be able to run again for the county commission seat in order to what? Run against his boss? Or to get just enough anti-Burgash votes out of the district so that Jeff Burgash would get a plurality of the only Republicans in only District 1, because, you know, in Escambia County, we only are eligible to vote for that one district you live in. Okay, it's not countywide like in Santa Rosa County. So was this just good luck for Jeff Burgash, or did he talk to some people and get them to do what they've done? Well, we don't know. But you do your best guess. You're Jeff Burgash, knowing that you've gotten an enormous amount of criticism from people like me, from a very vibrant community of online political commentators at the Escambia Citizens Watch Facebook page, like 10,000 people, I think, over there. And also knowing that you've, you know, done things that people in your district, your new district, that you completely redistricted, I would say gerrymandered, in order to previously exclude somebody who ran against you, Jonathan Owens, and also to get rid of some of the people who were running in the District 2 seat last time around, Steven Stroberger, and push him into your district. Oh, whoops, crap, he's going to run against me now. Well, whatever. That's okay. I'll put my aide up against him and two writing candidates. I mean, it's up to you as a voter to decide what you think about all this. District 3 is, oh my God, the hijinks in District. Well, I don't know hijinks. The developments in District 3, I will say. District 4, at least we have three Republicans running against a Democrat. That's kind of the way it should be. But really, they should have to run all against each other, and then you pick top two, then go to a runoff, or, as I've said, instant runoff voting, or ranked choice voting, any of those things, so that everybody gets a chance to vote. Look, I'm a Republican. I want Republicans. But I want Republicans properly, legitimately. I want Republicans to win a majority of the electorate. Otherwise, it's not a legitimate vote. No, or not as legitimate. And you can fix this a dozen different ways. By the way, just for the second to make sure that we know, you've also got in District 5, that's the north end, Stephen Barry is running against James Hilburn. Joshua Roberson, who is a no-party affiliate. Looks to be a legitimate candidate. Hasn't raised any money yet, but seems to be a legitimate candidate. But nobody's running in the Republican election. This is actually going to be a general election, okay? But he's an NPA, so he'll be on the ballot. And we'll see. I have no idea. We'll see, okay, what turns up in that case. District 3 is goofy as hell this year because you have a guy who tried to run, although he's tried to run in the past for other things. And this is John Johnson, who tried to qualify on Friday and missed, by my own view, making a lot of mistakes in the qualification, okay, against who is now has been reelected, Lumen May, without opposition. As a Republican, I would love to have a Republican to vote for. It doesn't mean I would vote for him. I'd just love to be able to vote in my district. I've never been able to vote for county commissioner in my district because I'm a Republican. We moved here. I've never voted for the county commission seat in Escambia County in the 10 years we've lived here. We didn't vote in District 5 because it was an off year for that district when we first moved here. And then we moved into District 3. And ever since, I've never had a chance to vote in this election. It's awesome. It's the best thing ever. So, thinking about this. Yeah, I think that's right. I don't think I've been able to vote in this election. Anyway, here's the thing. Do you like extremism and polarization and problems like this in our political system? Do you like it when the Republicans and the Democrats all seem extreme and don't get along with each other and don't appeal to the middle and moderate voters? You know it's because they don't have a say, right? If you got rid of now this wouldn't fix Congress, right? This wouldn't fix the Senate or any, this wouldn't fix the presidency. But there is a chance to actually make local politics more right. But all of these people are literally doing what the law allows them to do. None of them are doing anything illegal. Oh, it's sketchy as hell. It's shady as hell. Absolutely. It's immoral. Yes. It's not illegal. It's not illegal. Our election rules allow this. And so the question is, are you going to demand of your state legislators that they fix this crap? Or are you just going to, because, by the way, the two-party system does not care. They like, it exists because they want it. They want it this way. Why? Because it allows them to, I mean, look, I'll say it. Republicans want it this way. Republicans, which control three-fourths of the legislature in both, a little bit less in the Senate, a little bit more in the House, control three-quarters. They have a massive supermajority and, of course, every statewide office. Republicans make the rules. But these rules were here when Democrats had power. I mean, you know, the two-party system loves this. Then you have small voices like mine who are saying, this is wrong. This is bad. This is not the way it should be. Would it mean that maybe Democrats would elect? Maybe. But if that's what the people want, that's who should get elected. This is no different than denying black people or old people or young people or left-handed people the vote. Denying Democrats or no party affiliates the vote is wrong, and that's what this process allows.
So, you know, let's let everybody vote. That's what we deserve. We deserve to have our voices heard, and we deserve to have a board that listens to the people. Thank you.
Amen, Sandy Dimmick. I'm glad you said it. Of course, then you had James Calkins say just ridiculous things. Genuinely ridiculous things. That if you have more candidates, he said, here, listen.
Thank you so much for bringing that up, and I encourage more candidates to step up, run for office, put your name in the ring, and because that'll give you a voice. That'll give you an ability to have a shot to win.
Exactly the opposite of the truth. In the way our system is set up, more candidates do not give you more voice. They give you less voice. He's wrong. More candidates give you less voice in this particular system. 525 on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. And if you're thinking about making a choice in your career or just, you know, maybe you're a high school student or, you know, maybe, you know, you don't want to go to university or university isn't the right choice for you, whether for financial reasons or for whatever, Pensacola State College is a fantastic educational opportunity. Look, my kids, I have, you know, three. All three are going to have gone to PSC. One hasn't started yet because he's too young, but he will. The other two have already gone through, and they're basically 3 years of dual enrollment as high school sophomores, juniors, seniors. They got college credit and high school credit for free. You don't have to pay for college when you go to PSC, dual enrollment. And then they're going to, you know, go to university, and they've already, two of them have already gone there with a year and a half of college credit under their belt. Great transitional educational opportunity, especially for homeschoolers like ours were. You know, very effective teachers, class size that's manageable and reasonable, and a variety of times so you can really choose what fits your schedule. PSC is a fantastic resource. Campuses in Pensacola, Warrington, Milton, Century, South Santa Rosa Center, Downtown Pensacola, and Santa Rosa Industrial Park East. Find out what PSC can do to help you reach your future educational goals at pensacolastate.edu.
Did you know that feeling sluggish or weighed down could be a sign that your digestive system isn't working at its best? Taking Metamucil every day can help. Metamucil fiber powders help promote your daily digestive health using a plant-based fiber called psyllium. The gelling action of this special fiber traps and removes waste so you can feel lighter and more energetic. Metamucil, promoting digestive health for a better you. Learn more at Metamucil.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Advertising, marketing, digital marketing. These are all words you hear a lot about in today's world. But what do they mean? How do you get started? You can start by tuning into the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10:30 a.m. Join me, Lexi Mendoza, and I'll show you how to navigate the fast-growing landscape of digital advertising. Today at 10:30 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
The Dave Ramsey Show. Weeknights 7 to 10 before WEAR TV News. On News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I have people skills. I am good at dealing with people. Can't you understand that?
Good morning, 529 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Good morning. Maryland Governor Wes Moore planning to issue pardons for 175,000 marijuana convictions today. He said in an interview with the Washington Post that it's a step to heal decades of social and economic injustice. Police in a Texas city near Austin say at least two people now have died. Moore are injured following a shooting on Saturday at a Juneteenth celebration. That shooting happened at Old Settlers Park in Round Rock. That's just about 20 miles north of Austin. And the FAA now looking into how potentially substandard titanium sold using fake documentation ended up in commercial jets. That titanium came from a Chinese company. It ended up with Spirit AeroSystems. They make fuselages for Boeing and wings for Airbus. Right now, they don't know how much of that questionable material made it into service.
Okay. That's, yep.
Concerning.
Super, yeah, that's super odd. So, okay. It, you know what it kind of reminds me of is, you remember Borat?
Yes.
And the song, World's Greatest Exporter of Potassium?
I hadn't thought about that
that's,
one in a while.
That's what it reminds me of. World's greatest exporter of titanium.
Fox News, I'm CJ Popper. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu gets rid of the nation's war cabinet. A three-man team was set up after the October 7th Hamas attacks. The move comes following opposition leader Benny Gantz's decision to withdraw from the body last week. The Biden campaign rolls out a multi-million dollar strategy targeting Donald Trump.
This election is between a convicted criminal who's only out for himself and a president who's fighting for your family.
Fox's Brooke Singman has more.
The ad comes just days after President Biden held another star-studded Los Angeles fundraiser, this time raking in a record-breaking $30 million. The fundraiser was hosted by Jimmy Kimmel and other big names like former President Obama, George Clooney, and Julie Roberts.
Former President Trump meets with House Speaker Mike Johnson and North Carolina Congressman later today at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Palm Beach, Florida. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio Pensacola. Looking like another possibly rainy day today. 76 right now in cloudy skies. Of course, we'll get more with our forecast and Brooke Richardson in a couple of minutes. There's a big celebration over the weekend for Juneteenth on Saturday night. Now, a crowd of several hundred people were gathered at the Museum Plaza in downtown Pensacola. There was music, food, and lots of dancing.
You know, back in 1865, the slaves got news that they no longer had to work without pay anymore, that they were equal, they could own property. And can you imagine the feeling? That's what we're here celebrating, is that feeling that our ancestors got when they received the good news of freedom.
That is Aaron Watson of the Watson Firm, and they hosted that event and say it's something that everybody from all walks of life should come together and celebrate. Juneteenth became a federal holiday back in 2021. It marks the day when the Emancipation Proclamation was signed by President Abraham Lincoln. The Beach Express Toll Plaza in Orange Beach is now being demolished. The Alabama Department of Transportation says crews began that demolition yesterday on several of those toll booths. Work will continue for the next couple of nights on the removal before they start paving. The state eliminated those tolls after they bought the bridge for nearly $60 million. A Fairhope man has died after a motorcycle crash in Baldwin County. That happened about 5 miles east of Fairhope Saturday night when 35-year-old Andrew Harrison's bike left the road. He hit a ditch. Harrison was thrown from the motorcycle and pronounced dead at the scene of that crash. Investigators say Harrison was attempting to run from a Baldwin County deputy when it happened. The crash is still under investigation. And Escambia County deputies say they're looking for a missing 13-year-old boy. The sheriff's office says Adrian Robertson was last seen on Sunday morning in the 9700 block of Harlington Street. He's described as 5'9", 140 pounds, brown hair, brown eyes, and was last seen in a Mickey Mouse t-shirt, red shorts, and a gray hoodie. The sheriff's office has posted a photo on their Facebook page. If you have any information, contact them. It is 5:34 at News Radio, and let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We are going to be seeing some scattered showers and thunderstorms today. 70% chance of rain overall, high near 88 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 76. For Tuesday, 40% chance of rain, high near 89 degrees. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 76 degrees. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
And right now, 76 degrees in Pensacola. 1 degree warmer, 77 in Gulf Breeze, 74 in Milton. Our next news at 6 o'clock. We have breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, and dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Alphabet will have to defend itself at trial against the Justice Department claims of a Google monopoly in online advertising technology after a federal judge rejected the tech giant's request to decide the case ahead of time. The company argued antitrust enforcers failed to show that it controls at least 70% of the market for display advertising shown on the open web and that Google doesn't qualify as a monopoly. The trial is set to begin in September. Southwest Airlines has announced that one of its passenger flights in April came within 400 feet of slamming into the ocean off the coast of Hawaii after weather conditions forced pilots to bypass a landing attempt. The airline said the Boeing 737 MAX 8 jet briefly dropped more than 4,000 feet per minute before the flight crew pulled up to avoid disaster. No one was injured on the flight, which safely returned to its departure airport in Honolulu. The FAA is investigating. Futures are mixed. That's your money now.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Friday night, spend the evening with your neighbors at another gallery night in downtown Pensacola. Come for the art from local vendors, live music, food, and fun. See gallerynightpensacola.org. The Bushlight Fishing Rodeo is this weekend. Check out the action at Flounders Saturday 2 to 7 and Sunday noon to 6. See pensacolasports.org for more. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
Hey, Pensacola, get ready for a midday delight that'll have you hooked. Weekdays from 11 until 2 on News Radio Pensacola. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show. Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins are the dynamic trio that'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud during your lunch break. They dish out the hottest topics, bring you the latest news, and deliver their unique blend of humor and insight that'll have you coming back for more. It's the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show on News Radio Pensacola. 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
What do you need, son?
Need to borrow your bow.
Let's drop some lead on those motherfuckers.
Light them up.
going to sink this battleship, no way.
This one's for you, Chappie.
This is Iron Eagle. I am the flight leader of an American assault force.
Sent to recover Colonel Ted Masters, whom you are unlawfully holding prisoner.
I've been to Ted!
No way.
If I'm lying, I'm dying.
Well, boys, I reckon this is it. Nuclear combat toe-to-toe with the Ruskies.
Hey, what about Major Kong?
Yes, yes. On Friday, we had a chance to continue our series on meeting your tenant commands. These are the commanding units that do all different kinds of operations on board NAS Pensacola, NAS Whiting Field, and, of course, at Corry Station, which is a subsidiary of NAS Pensacola. In case you didn't know, it is not a separate command. The commanding officer village of NAS Pensacola is also the commanding officer at Corry Station. But we'll get to all of that over the course of time. I just figure, like, you know, I want you all to know what takes place on board these bases. And Friday was a great example of this because we had a chance to talk to United States Air Force Colonel Shane Seamus Moscato, who is the commanding officer of the 479th Flying Training Group. And as soon as I say Air Force, there's a lot of people like, wait, what? Yeah, there is a massive Air Force training component on board NAS Pensacola. You say, is there? And I say, yes, there definitely is. And that's why we had a great conversation with him. And it actually made me very happy to change up the introductory stager there to bring in some Air Force references to Iron Eagle and Dr. Strangelove, which I saw on his face made him very, very happy because, oh yeah, they know all of that. Seamus, Colonel Shane Moscato from the United States Air Force, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Great. Thank you so much, Andrew. It's fantastic to be here. It's not in an airplane, but it's still a great morning.
Very good. Well, let's start with this. I think the average person, and this is why I wanted to do this series, the average person listening to us right now, they know all about the base, and they had no idea that there was an Air Force training component on board NAS Pensacola.
Yes, and that's where we are. And I'd really like to start off with the fact that it's called Naval Air Station Pensacola, right? And so Oftentimes, you know, in the military, people say, hey, where are you stationed? Where are you stationed? It kind of has a negative connotation with it, if you will. And what I want to really thank is all the public listening and the people of Pensacola and yourself for having us out here. The great thing about Pensacola is this is home. It's not a station. It's nothing negative. And really, that's what I'd like to start off by recognizing this morning is the community that Pensacola is. The support that it provides to all the military, to include us airmen on NAS Pensacola. So yes, we're a 900 strong formation. So there's 900 people in the group, and that doesn't include the other roughly 600 airmen in the Pensacola area. So it's about 1,500 airmen in NAS Pensacola. So I always like to say Pensacola is absolutely a Navy town. I will not argue that, but it does have a gigantic Air Force footprint.
I just want to pause there for a second because there were minds blowing up all over the listening area. They're like 1,500 and 900 on NAS Pensacola. Wait, what? Yeah. Well, that's why I wanted to do this series, because you have no idea. So for people who, again, you know, don't know, which is, I think, most of us, you know, you have 900 people under your command. You have four different subordinate organizations. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So the 479 Flying Training Group, we are the sole producer of combat systems officers for the United States Air Force. And then within the formation,
the Air Force equivalent of the NFO in the Navy. Yes, so the backseat pilot or the additional seat or backseat person in the airframe or the additional person. Go ahead.
You got it. So Captain White Cricket, who I know you spoke with earlier. So Trey Wing 6 is the equivalent to my formation. So both of us have a like mission set, just mine is for the Air Force and Cricket's is for the Navy. So then within the group, so the 479 Flying Training Group, we have four squadrons. There's the 479 Student Squadron, which is kind of the care and feeding of our you know, students going through the program. There's the 479th Operational Support Squadron, which, as it alludes to, is the operational support to facilitate our mission. However, what's worth noting in there They have an Air Force-wide program as well, so the Electromagnetic Spectrum Operations School. And actually, yesterday it was a privilege of mine to go to the graduation of 12 NATO officers that just completed our program.
Oh, nice.
So we were able to graduate some Norwegians, Italians, Germans out of that program. So that's fantastic as well, which is, you know, again, a hidden element.
Right.
A hidden element within NAS Pensacola.
Is that a – do we do a lot of CISO training for foreign officers here?
No, so that's opposite.
Oh, you said that's in the electromagnet. Yeah, so that's the support squadron. That's right.
Schoolhouse. But then the other two squadrons we have is the 451st Flying Training Squadron. They operate our T1s and do the advanced portion of our syllabus. And then the 455th Flying Training Squadron, which conducts our primary initial flying training with the T6.
Okay, so let's walk through that a little bit, because this is why I think it's really good to have had Cricket on last week, because he explained the Navy component. And you guys, is it fair to call you a mirror setup to what Training Wing 6 does with training the NFOs?
It's very similar. In fact, you know, if you were to dial back when I went through this program as a young second lieutenant, it was split between NAS Pensacola and Randolph Air Force Base. At the time, it was joint specialized undergraduate navigator training, and it was a joint program. The Navy and the Air Force were okay. One and the same. Around 2009, 2010, when our program shut down in Randolph and came here to Pensacola, it was intended to maintain a joint presence. However, that's where the great division happened, and the Air Force is training the Air Force, Navy is training the Navy. But by and large, yes, it's almost a mirror image. There's some differences, obviously, in how the Navy trains and what their mission set is, and how we train what our mission set is. But it is very, very similar. And Crick and I have a very positive relationship. Often, times. What's lessons learned and best practices we can learn from each other.
And just so, because I want to make sure for people who might not have caught the other interview and don't understand what Training Wing 6 does. So you will take people who have been in ROTC, you will take people who went to the Air Force Academy, and you will, and these are people who are not going to essentially, and pardon my civilian lingo, but they're not going to pilot the plane, but they are going to operate all of the other aspects on board a plane that's going to have more than one occupant. So not your F-16, but like your F-15 Strike Eagle, or like on a C-130 that's, an attack aircraft that would operate like out of Hurlburt. Yep. E-3s and E-8s and B-52s and B-1s that have people beside just the pilot. Those are the folks that you're training. Combat systems officers is the broad category. If they're operating offensive things, it's weapons systems officers or WISOs. And you do the entirety of their training before they learn the specific platform that they work on. Do I have that right?
Andrew, you have it. So it's, CISO, combat system officer, is an umbrella term. And so what we do is we take newly commissioned officers, typically. Some will be prior officers who want to transfer over to the aviation field. But we take young officers who have no aviation experience, more than likely. We turn them into aviators to do exactly what you're talking about. So it's not piloting, but it is providing the support for what the mission set specifically is doing. And it is that umbrella term that you alluded to. So special operators, weapon systems officers, navigators, electronic warfare officers that are doing, whatever the specific mission set is. So the pilots will, do all the pilotage, get the aircraft into position that it needs to be, and then our graduates ultimately go to their formal training unit to hone their mission set to specifically conduct operations as required.
The pilot brings the platform to the location, and the CISO or the WISO brings the ordnance
effect.
Or the jamming or the whatever needs to be done to the target you've got there. We're talking with Colonel Shane, call sign Seamus Moscato. He is the am I saying Moscato right?
You are.
Okay,
just
good.
Like the wine.
So make sure. What's that?
Just like the wine.
Just like the wine. Got it. Commander of the 479th Flying Training Group here on board NAS Pensacola, but with the Air Force. We'll come back to this in just a second. Back now to the Colonel of the 479th Flying Training Group, Seamus. So I look up in the sky on a given day in Pensacola, and I see the T-6-2 Texan, and it's flying overhead, and I think to myself, oh, well, that's obviously coming from Whiting Field, where Fez is training his pilots in their primary flight instruction. Not necessarily. That could also be out of Training Wing 6 on board NAS Pensacola, where we have Cricket is training the NFOs for the Navy. Okay, so it's one of those two, definitely. Not necessarily. It could also be for the 479th Flying Training Group, where you're training the combat systems officers or CISOs. How will I know who's doing what by looking up at the plane?
Sure thing. So, distinct paint jobs is how you can differentiate if it's an Air Force T-6. So when you look up, if you see a T-6 with blue wings and not orange, Those will be the ones assigned to the 479, specifically our 455th Flying Training Squadron.
Got it.
And of those, there's 24 that we have assigned to our formation.
And that's the first phase. That's primary, would you call it?
Yeah, so that's our primary phase. That's okay. Oftentimes, you know, we'll have young officers getting into an airplane for the very first time. You know, they've never even touched an airplane before, so their dollar ride is in a high performance T6 aircraft.
And then the second phase, the advanced training for the CISOs, is going to be in the T1A Jayhawk.
That is correct. Yep.
And okay, so I didn't know this, and in prep for the show, I looked it up, and I thought, you know, I have seen those tons of times around the area, and I just always thought it was somebody's private plane.
Yep.
Because that's what it looks like. It just looks like some rich dude's flying out of NAS Pensacola. You don't have a lot of civilian jets flying out of NAS Pensacola. So tell them what they would see and tell them how to recognize that that's your guys and gals learning to be a CISO.
Yes, just as Andrew described there, you know, the T1, it looks like a small business jet. And what we have done is we've modified that for our training. So, you know, if you were to go buy a T1, if you have some extra cash laying around, Andrew, if you were to buy yours, then come over and see what we have. It's going to be significantly different. So we've actually modified it. We'll put two students in there. There'll be a pilot and two instructors, and they actually will do that kind of operation like we discussed. You know, the pilot's going to be flying to where it goes, and then as we fly around in the local area, simulating effects, simulating, you know, weapons employment, electromagnetic spectrum operations via those two stations on the airplane. So, and then we'll do that both mid-level and low-level. So we'll fly a lot of the low-level routes just north of here, about 1,000 feet in the T1.
Very good. And this is the sort of the mirror image companion plane, if you want to think of it, for the T-45 Goshawk that the Navy flies. You guys fly the Jayhawk. And they're not, I mean, they don't look at all alike. They're not similar in any way, the T-45 and the T-1, but just in terms of the role they play in your training pipeline, right?
Yeah, so, you know, the T-6 we use specifically to provide some initial airmanship. Right?
Okay.
Up, down, left, right, how do I talk on a radio? And then we start getting into that mission honing skills in the T-1 before we put wings on someone's uniform and send them off to their formal training unit, whether it be down the street at Hurlburt Field if they're going special operations, up to Seymour for F-15Es, or off to Barksdale if they're going to be going to B-52s.
So I'm driving north on Three Mile Bridge coming into town. I managed to catch a T-1 up in the air. I recognize it. Is he pretending that I'm a surface-to-air missile site and he's trying to jam me as a target?
Yeah.
Is that the kind of stuff that I...
We have some unique methodologies for and tactics, techniques, and procedures of how we go out and conduct our operation. What I do want
that's
everyone
a military
to know,
yes. yes. Okay, that's a military yes.
What I want everyone to know is we're honing the skills of our young airmen to go out and, you know, protect our security, our values, and our prosperity, and rest assured we're doing that with everyone's best interest.
So if you're out in the open, you could be a target. Excellent. I always think that when I see the C-130s, you know, the AC-130s going overhead, and I'm like, I know they don't have rounds in there, but I'm thinking, okay, I know what's going on here. All right, so after they graduate with you, then they're going to go off to learn the particular platform. And I mentioned a handful of them before, but maybe just tell people some of the roles that you send people off eventually to graduate from your program here and what planes they get on board and what kind of missions they conduct. Because, like, you spent two tours at Hurlburt.
That's correct.
And so, you know, staffing the Spookies, the gunships, that's part of what you train people to do, right?
Absolutely. So again, we'll put combat systems officer wings on our students anywhere from the 7 months to about a year, depending on what platform they're going to.
Okay.
We will then source out across the Air Force, send it to the special operations community, the bomber community, the fighter community, and the ISR. So, you know, the folks that we send down the street to Hurlburt, they're going to end up being members of the MC-130, the AC-130, and the U-28. You know, for the fighters, it'll be limited to the Strike Eagle, so they have 15E backseaters. The B-52, the B-1, we'll send Wizzos off to those platforms. And then the RC-135, which is really, you know, the backbone of our military's understanding of other adversaries' weapon systems that we'll use, you know, our ISR capabilities on.
Do we also send the KC-135s also?
No longer to the KC-135.
Oh, not anymore. Yeah. Okay, got it. That's the refueling.
And then we also
plane.
Do
okay.
send to a couple of the unmanned aerial vehicles.
Okay, so you do have a drone component.
Yes.
Okay.
So we not here locally, but they'll go through our program and go off to some of the RPAs in the Air Force inventory.
So in the Air Force, your folks learn how to target and drop bombs, how to attack radar sites, how to control communications, the airspace and the radar space around the airspace. everything involved in those missions you make possible by your training.
Yes, and we do that at the foundational level, right? So it's undergraduate combat systems officer training here. So we provide, you know, that baseline element that, hey, we can call you a professional aviator, and then they go off to their formal training unit to hone the skill specific to conduct combat operations.
How many a year do you graduate?
So we hover right around 240. So 240. Okay. We usually have about 250 students in training at any given time. But we typically graduate about 240 per year, and we're looking to expand that as we kind of grow the field, especially with the electromagnetic spectrum requirements.
And which is obviously has become more and more important over the years, because it used to be you control the air, you control the battle, now you control the EM, you control the, you can't control it without controlling that, as we're learning in Ukraine and elsewhere. Anyway, what happens, this is to understand the significance, because again, it's interesting that we have Air Force component here. People might start to be getting the sense of how important it is what you do and what your operation does. But what happens if you fail to accomplish your mission on board NAS Pensacola, training the CISOs and the WISOs?
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to highlight where we kind of start off. So we are the sole source of generating combat systems officers for the U.S. Air Force. So, you know, failure here on NAS Pensacola for the 479th could potentially be failure for those mission sets that the Air Force relies on to have combat systems officers on board. So, you know, across that, you know, bomber, fighter, SOF, ISR communities, it all starts here, because there's not another base who has the like mission that we have. So all of them start here at NAS Pensacola, which is a fantastic place for us to do our training.
And you mentioned SOF in passing. People may not know the acronyms, but Special Operations Forces, which would be like what happens at Hurlburt. And
yes.
So you know from personal experience, having been at the other end of the pipeline, the importance of what you do now as the training mission. Man, fascinating stuff. How many times have you seen Iron Eagle?
Probably lost count this way. Although I am more of a Dr. Strangelove guy.
Nice. So, all right.
It's all about the big board.
You can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice. All right. And you did bring your lieutenant with you, and you actually brought your daughter with you. So getting to see a little bit of dad at work, and I just love it. You've been here for how long?
Just got here in January.
Oh, okay.
However, third assignment on the Gulf Coast with two prior tours down the street at Hurlburt. And
maybe an affinity, maybe a request here or there All right, I like it. Very good. Well, Colonel Moscato, great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. Thank you for doing what you do. Thank you for training our men and women to be CISOs and WISOs. And also, as I say, just explaining to people what your operation does. It's been my pleasure to be able to expose the tenant commands to the public and get them to learn what you all do and the sizable component and the essential component that you provide in the training pipeline for the United States Air Force. Thanks for your service and the time. We'll talk to you again soon. Nice to meet you.
Great. Thank you very much. If I could, just put out there, it's not just the officers we're training on NAS Pensacola. It's officers and enlisted across Corry Station, Whiting Field, and NAS Pensacola. So thank you for the opportunity, Andrew. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And by the way, she is a captain, not a lieutenant. That's my mistake, because the bars mean one thing in the Navy and a different thing in the Marines. So I apologize. I didn't mean to call her the wrong rank. Anyway, if you are thinking about buying or selling a home, trying to decide what to do, when to do it, where to live, all of the things, okay, this is why you have a good real estate agent. Look, when the market was hot, Christina Leavenworth was helping people get, above list price, multiple offers in the same day. I mean, that was very normal for selling homes. And to some degree, it was beneficial, okay? Now, when the market is not as hot, okay, and there's a lot of uncertainty, now it's really beneficial if you're selling to get the best price possible and to make it happen as quickly as possible. If you're buying, to also get the best price possible and to facilitate those deals, even with the new builders, okay? That's something that she can help you work with, because they can actually do things like buy down your points and, you can do deals with the new builders. Anyway, the point is, if you're thinking about buying or selling and you want somebody who really knows their stuff, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, 175 homes they sold last year, 723-9158.
The Port of Pensacola is more than just a name. It's a powerhouse of economic opportunities, a strategic location that sparks growth and prosperity, contributing significantly to the local and regional economy with 23 incredible businesses that call this port home. Big names like C-Max Materials, GE Wind Energy, and soon the prestigious American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the Port of Pensacola has been the driving force behind Northwest Florida's economic success. Explore more at portofpensacola.com.
Can going to the shooting range relieve stress and anxiety? Many Americans are starting to see the health benefits of spending time at the shooting range.
Shooting increases mental capacity, boosts confidence, spikes adrenaline, and improves balance. Stop by Jim's Firearms and pick up all you need to head to the range. Jim's Firearms always encourages you to get out and shoot and know your firearm. Jim's Firearms at the corner of Blue Angel and Sorrento, near the back gate of NAS. Online at jimsfirearms.net.
As a business owner, you have a lot on your plate, from managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, helping with COVID employee retention credits, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and their HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Avalon HR, employing made easy.
News Radio 92.3 gets you live programming every day from 5 a.m. until 7 p.m. on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
E.T. Phone Home.
Good morning, 5:58 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom. He's got a headline or two for us. David?
I do. Well, I actually wanted to start out with a quick local headline just in from PPD. There was a SWAT team response this morning, and Mike Wood says that nobody was injured and they have taken that person into custody. We'll have a little bit more on that right after our Fox News here at the top of the hour.
Absolutely. And yeah, out of Bolin Place, and a guy had been barricaded in the home, and it's good. This is one of the things that people sometimes don't understand, is that the purpose of the SWAT team is to save lives and to get everybody home or to jail safely.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.